She wasn't warm and fuzzy, but she cared about her staff's well-being. My head pounded with a million worries stacked on top of each other. While Scarlett slept, I kept an eye on both the news and the match. Thankfully, we were up by one, but I was more focused on the brief close-ups of Vincent's face than the actual gameplay. I tried to read his expressions and figure out if he knew about Scarlett yet. The video of me at the hospital had been uploaded when the players were already on the pitch, so I doubted he was aware of that. But had he turned on his phone or spoken with coach before the match? It was impossible to tell, since Vincent always looked like a moody son of a bitch during a match. Coach, on the other hand, was visibly angry. If he clenched his jaw any harder during the few camera shots of him, he'd shatter a molar. Gallagher, my sub, was doing a damn good job, but it didn't matter. There'd be hell to pay for my last-minute decision to skip the match later. It was technically a personal emergency, but since no one was dead or dying, I doubted he'd sympathize much.
Asher, go get something to eat,
Brooklyn said.
Scarlett's still asleep. She's not going to, I don't know, roll over and fall onto the floor. We'll keep an eye on her,
Karina added. I nearly protested, but we were all tired and hungry and cranky after hours in the hospital. I didn't want to get into an argument with Scarlett's friends, but I would also rather chew off my hand than eat the cafeteria food. Instead, I ducked into the loo and bought a pack of pretzels and water on my way back. I ate them next to the vending machine, grateful for the energy boost. When I returned to the hall outside Scarlett's room, only Brooklyn was there. She jumped up when she saw me. Any new developments while I was gone? I asked. I didn't expect her to say yes, but a nervous expression crossed her face at my question.
Well, Karina's in the bathroom and Scarlett's awake again.
Already? She'd looked so exhausted when I talked to her that I expected her to sleep through the night. Did something happen? Was she in so much pain she couldn't sleep?
Yes, but, you might not want to go in there,
Brooklyn said when I moved toward the door. It was too late. I'd already cracked it open. Why? My words died in my throat. Because Scarlett wasn't alone. Standing beside her bed, his back to me, was Vincent. I'd recognize that buzz cut and number four kit anywhere. He must have come straight from the match. He turned, his face darkening when he saw me. Fuck. I hadn't seen any news about me and Scarlett yet, but considering I'd missed my most anticipated match of the season so far to be by her side, I guess he'd pieced the puzzle together faster than the Paps. I held up my hands as he stormed toward me. Vincent, I didn't get a chance to finish my sentence before he hauled his fist back and slammed it into my face.
Chapter 43. Scarlett. It turned out hospitals frowned upon fistfights breaking out on their premises, especially when one of their patients tried to hobble out of bed and stop it. I wasn't stupid enough to try and throw myself into the middle of Vincent and Ash's fight, but I needed to do something. God knew I didn't have the strength to yell like I normally would. Unfortunately, I also didn't have the strength to sit up straight, much less walk anywhere. My head made it about 4 inches above my pillow before sheer fatigue dragged it back down. Stop, the words scraped up my throat. Stop. Neither of them heard me over their grunts, curses, and the sound of fists striking flesh. Once Vincent threw the first punch, all bets were off. Asher had retaliated, and now the two of them were grappling 5 feet from me like Neanderthals without impulse control. A migraine blossomed at the base of my skull. Rest and medical attention had soothed the worst of my pain, but I still hurt all over, and my head throbbed where I hit it against the corner of my coffee table. Thankfully, the angle at which I fell meant I only suffered a flesh wound and mild concussion. It could have been much worse, all things considered. However, seeing two of the people I cared about most beat each other up in my hospital room was not conducive to a speedy recovery.
You bastard!
Vincent swung at Asher again.
You lied to me! We were going to tell you!
Asher ducked the hit.
This is why we didn't! You!
The door swung open again, cutting off Vincent's response. The doctor rushed in, followed by Karina, Brooklyn, and one of the nurses. Screams, shouts, and swear words flew through the air with abandon. I wanted to scream with them. I wanted to stand, yell, do anything except be an observer of my own life, but I couldn't summon the strength. The migraine spread to my eyes, my temples, my jaw, everywhere. Enough! My doctor finally wrestled the situation under control. Her eyes flashed with fury. Everyone out!
But you can't! She doesn't!
I don't want to hear it. I have a patient resting in here. She pointed at me. And you are in here fist fighting? You should be glad I don't call security. Now get out! For such a kind-looking old lady, Dr. Ambani had one hell of a set of pipes. It was as if a fog had cleared, and they realized I was in the room for the first time since Asher opened the door. Vincent and Asher swung toward me with stricken expressions. Guilt etched horrified lines across their faces, but the doctor didn't give them an opportunity to apologize. She jabbed her finger toward the door and they shuffled out, their heads hanging in shame. I tried to say something before they left, but the words didn't make it past my lips. I'd sapped the remainder of my energy talking to Asher and then Vincent when they first arrived. It was a miracle I could keep my eyes open. Dr. Ambani and the nurse bustled to my side. There was poking and prodding and low murmurs exchanged between them, but I couldn't make out what they were saying. A host of sentiments crowded my throat. I wanted to tell Asher how touched I was that he'd skipped the match for me and that everything would be okay. Our secret was out, which meant the worst had passed. I wanted to apologize to Vincent for keeping our relationship from him and reassure him that he didn't have to worry about me, that this wasn't a Raphael 2.0 situation and that I was happier with Asher than I'd ever been. I wanted to remind them not to let today ruin their fragile truce, because they were so much better as friends than as enemies. I wanted to say a lot of things, but they would have to wait. My grasp on consciousness slipped. Steel anchors dragged my eyelids closed, and darkness descended, shutting out the rest of the world.
Asher. I let Vincent have the first punch, but after that the gloves were off. I felt guilty about lying to him, but I didn't feel guilty enough about it to serve as his docile punching bag. By the time the doctor kicked us out of the room, we were both worse for wear. A cut on my lip dripped blood into my mouth, and a dark bruise mottled his jaw. I was ashamed of fighting with him when Scarlet was lying right there, but when Vincent swung at me, my fight or flight had kicked in and blacked out everything except self-defense. Dr. Ambani and the nurse stayed in the room while we glared at each other in the hall. It was either a slow day or the hospital staff had been warned not to linger near us because the corridor was empty save for two nurses at the far end. There was no one around to eavesdrop or record us except Karina and Brooklyn, who appeared shell-shocked by the rapid escalation in events. Vincent's fists clenched and unclenched. How long has this been going on? By this, I assumed he meant my relationship with Scarlet. The truth was already out. I might as well tell him the whole truth. Since July. July! I swore I saw steam billowing from his ears in clouds of unchecked anger. You've been sneaking around together behind my back for almost 3 months! Like I said, we didn't tell you because we knew you would react like this! Frustration snapped its teeth, lending my words more bite than I'd intended. I should give Vincent more grace, considering he had to deal with a double whammy bombshell of our relationship and his sister's hospitalization. But I was too stressed and worn out to give a damn. For the record, we didn't want to date or keep it a secret from you after you returned to London. It sort of just happened. It was a lame excuse, but this wasn't the time nor place to explain the intricacies of the past 3 months. Vincent didn't appear to be listening anyway. His attention had dropped to my trainers. I never wore my cleats to the stadium before a match. Disbelief bloomed across his face. Were you the guy in my sister's shower when I dropped by her flat over the summer? Fuck. Technically, I said with great caution, I was in the bath. Christ! A resulting string of French swear words echoed in the sterile hallway. She told me it was someone from RAB. I cleared my throat. Also, technically, I was someone from RAB, at least for the summer. Vincent's eye twitched. He looked like he wanted to swing at me again, but a sharp voice interjected.
Stop it.
Brooklyn stepped between us. She and Karina had been observing so quietly from the sidelines, I almost forgot they were there.
Look at you two, grown men acting like children in a hospital, of all places. Are you not ashamed?
Crimson streaked across the tops of Vincent's cheekbones. Don't!
Don't what? Call you out on your bullshit?
She crossed her arms, her face the picture of stubbornness. He was at least a foot taller than her, but she appeared to tower over him even as she glared up at him.
Your sister is lying in there.
She pointed at the closed door to Scarlett's room.
Trying to rest, and one of the first things you do when you arrive is start a fucking brawl in her hospital room. She's stressed enough. She doesn't need her brother and her boyfriend making things worse. And you?
Brooklyn whirled around to jab a finger at me.
You should have known better than to indulge Vincent's bullshit. There's a difference between self-defense and actively engaging in a fistfight. No wonder my dad gets so grumpy when either of you comes up in conversation. I'm surprised you haven't driven him into an early grave yet, considering he has to deal with your selfish, childish antics every day.
You could have heard a pin drop in the silence. We gaped at her, too stunned about getting dressed down by someone half our size to respond immediately. Behind her, Karina smirked, looking like she was enjoying our discomfort a little too much. But Brooklyn wasn't wrong. We were acting selfish and childish. The doctor had pretty much said the same thing, but the way Brooklyn laid it out struck home. We were so caught up in our pride and our need to win this stupid argument that we hadn't considered how our actions would affect Scarlett. A fresh wave of guilt doused the testosterone in the hall, leaving me cold and shamefaced. Across from me, Vincent shoved his hands into his pockets, his face red. If I really wanted to get technical, I was the one at fault for convincing Scarlett to delay telling Vincent about us. His anger was understandable, but when he came at me, my knee-jerk instinct had been to go on offense.
We are going to stay here and keep an eye on Scarlett.
Brooklyn gestured to herself and Karina.
You two talk it out somewhere else. I don't want your negative vibes poisoning this area.
Yeah?
Vincent's eyes narrowed. He obviously didn't appreciate getting bossed around.
How are you going to make us leave?
A smile dripped with sugar.
Stay and find out.
They stood toe to toe, their expressions stamped with defiance. The air sparked with challenge, but after a tense, drawn-out stare-down, Vincent jerked his gaze away from her and stormed down the hall. He didn't say a word as he left.
That's what I thought.
Brooklyn arched an eyebrow at me.
Your turn, lover boy.
I didn't argue. I owed her for telling me about Scarlett's hospitalization and for slapping some sense into us, figuratively speaking. I headed down the hall after Vincent, and we walked in silence until we reached a quiet alcove next to the vending machines. The bulky black boxes blocked us from view of the main hall and afforded us a small degree of privacy. We leaned side by side against the wall, our bodies vibrating with lingering resentment.
I can't believe you're dating my sister.
Vincent stared straight ahead, his jaw grinding.
I knew you would try to pull that shit while I was gone. I was a fool to think otherwise. I never should have left her alone with you.
You think I wanted this to happen when I first found out who she was?
She's a Dubois. I thought you all sucked.
Vincent snorted. I told you none of this was planned, I said. It just happened.
Right. You just happened to fall into bed with my sister.
He turned to face me, his cheekbones taut with suspicion.
Did you do it to get back at me? So you could rub your relationship in my face?
My temper ignited again.
First, we didn't just fall into bed. Second, not everything is about you, I snapped. If I wanted to rub it in your face, I would have told you the second you were back in London. Hell, I would have sent a carrier pigeon to break the news to you while you were gone. That would make sense. Trying to hide it from you doesn't. Of course, I can't blame you for not connecting those dots, considering your brain is the size of a peanut and your common sense is floating at the bottom of the Seine somewhere.
Vincent's nostrils flared.
Fuck you! Fuck you! I was so tired of his shit. I felt bad about fighting with him in front of Scarlett, but she wasn't here right now. You might think the world revolves around you, but Scarlett is her own person. She confides in you because she respects you. God knows why. And she cares about you, not because she has to. And I think you're doing her a great bloody disservice to insinuate I'm only interested in her because she's your sister and not because she's incredible on her own. She's smart, beautiful, talented, funny. Believe me when I say her relation to you is her biggest con. I paused. That and her cooking. Vincent stared at me at a loss for words. Several beats passed before he finally responded.
She is a shit cook, he muttered. That's why we always order takeaway when we eat together.
I allowed myself a tiny scoff as we lapsed into another brooding silence. My pulse pounded from the force of my rant, but now that I'd gotten it off my chest, I could think more clearly. Our arguments were great for blowing off steam, but they weren't getting us anywhere because they didn't address the root of the issue.
Look, I said. I know I'm not your first choice when it comes to boyfriends for Scarlett. You're not my second, third, or fourth choice, either.
I ignored his petulant grumble and continued. But I care about her more than anyone else in the world, and I don't want you to blame her for any of this. She hated lying to you, but she was so worried about your career that she didn't want to just drop the news on you.
Vincent's brows drew together. What the hell does your relationship have to do with my career?
She was worried that if you found out, it would make things worse between us and affect our game. She knows what Coach said about benching us if we couldn't work together. She didn't want to add to the problem.
He huffed out a long breath.
Right.
The initial thoughtless, instinct-driven flames of our wrath had died down, leaving us drained. Brooklyn had basically sent us to time out, but we'd needed it.
I don't doubt you care about her, Vincent said. The fact you skipped a match against Holchester to be with her proves that. But this isn't about your feelings toward her. It's about honesty. You both lied to me,
his mouth pressed into a thin line.
When we were at the Angry Boar after the charity match, you let me go on and on about how I appreciate you not hitting on her, and you didn't say a fucking thing.
I know. Guilt seeped through me. I'm sorry.
It was my first time apologizing to Vincent. It was easier than I thought it would be because I meant it. If I were in his shoes, I'd be upset too.
We were going to tell you the week you returned to London, I said. But you and I were starting to get along, and after your speech at the Angry Boar, I was even more worried that you wouldn't handle the news well.
I was the one who convinced Scarlett to postpone our talk. I didn't want to ruin our truce so close to the start of the season. Looking back, we could have handled the situation better, communicated better. But these things were clearer in hindsight, and it was hard to make the right decision in the moment.
You should have just told me, Vincent growled. I'm the captain of our team. I care about the season and about winning as much as you do, if not more. I would have handled it better if you told me to my face, like a man, instead of letting me figure it out myself while my sister's in the fucking hospital.
I should have, I admitted. But it's too late for that now.
He lets out another snort.
Oh, you think?
More silence. The hum of the vending machines buzzed through the air, muffling the faint voices and footsteps from the main hall.
Did we win?
I asked after several minutes of wordlessness. The match. I hadn't checked the final score before he showed up. Vincent shook his head.
Draw. 2-2.
Fuck.
Yeah.
We exhaled our frustrations with twin sighs.
Coach is absolutely furious with you, by the way.
Vincent sounded far too happy about that.
He's going to flay you alive the next time he sees you.
I grimaced. I foresaw a lot of punishing runs in my future, but I didn't care. Much. That's fine, I said. I'll survive.
You always do.
A trace of bitterness ran beneath Vincent's voice and reminded me of his reasons for not liking me.
You're like Teflon.
Trust me. I flashed back to the thousands of awful messages I received after I announced my transfer to Blackcastle.
I'm not as invincible as you think. Maybe not, but let me think you are. It's easier to hate you again that way. He rubbed a hand over his mouth. No matter what I did, I was always compared to you. We don't even play the same position, yet there you were, always mentioned in the same breath as me when I know I couldn't have gotten away with half the shit you did. If it makes you feel better, I said after a long pause, you have a World Cup, and I don't. Vincent barked out a short laugh. He does, actually. As recently as yesterday, I wouldn't have dreamed of joking about the World Cup. Seeing victory slip from my grasp during the last tournament would always be one of the defining moments of my life and career. I would never forget it. But my earlier fight with Vincent allowed me to vent some of that pent-up anger, and our truce the past few weeks had softened the jagged edges of my resentment. He'd stood up for me against Bachi and Lyle, and like it or not, we were on the same team. Even if we weren't, I'd have to interact with him regularly because of Scarlet. All that made the World Cup incident easier to swallow. It really was time to put it behind us. But that didn't mean I wasn't going to get my revenge the next time we played against each other. Don't worry, though, I said. That'll change in 2 years. The next World Cup was bearing down fast. Qualifiers for Europe started in the spring, and I could already taste the thrill. There was no way England wouldn't make it into the tournament. Our national team was the best it had been in over a decade. We'll see about that, Vincent scoffed, but his words lacked bite. This time he was the one who paused before continuing. I'm not proud of what I did. If I could go back, I would have done things different. But the past is the past. We can't change it. I closed my eyes. Old memories resurfaced, as vivid as if they were happening right at that moment. The shrill of the whistle, the cheers and boos of the crowd, the smell of grass and sweat, and my sheer, utter disbelief when the ref whipped out a red card. It was the closest I'd come to punching someone on the pitch in my entire career. Every time I trained, every time someone criticized me and I thought I couldn't keep going, I relived that moment. I channeled my grievances and used them as fuel not only to be better, but to be the best. And it worked. The red card had affected the trajectory of my career in many ways, and as much as I despised Vincent for it, not all of the consequences had been bad. It had pushed me to where I was today. No, we can't change the past, I said. The same way Scarlet and I can't go back and tell you before today. But what's done is done. There's no use dwelling on it. Honestly, I was relieved our relationship was out in the open. The circumstances of the reveal weren't great, and Vincent's first response had been less than ideal. However, we'd needed that fight. We had too much bad blood for it to be smoothed over with words. Vincent blew out a deep sigh. No, I guess not. We didn't say anything else. Instead, we took the moment to simply sit and acknowledge the closing of one long, rocky chapter in our shared history. Coach, Holchester, the Paps, the public's inevitable discovery of my relationship with Scarlet, and the ensuing fallout. That was the future. The future would always be there. But today, we'd finally laid the past to rest.
Chapter 44. Scarlet. The hospital kept me overnight and discharged me the next evening. That same night, an hour before I was discharged, news of my relationship with Asher broke. Football superstar ditches match for his hospitalized girlfriend. The thin line between love and hate, Asher Donovan revealed to be dating his biggest rival's sister. Who is Scarlet Dubois, Asher Donovan's secret girlfriend? It was pure chaos. My phone blew up with so many calls and texts that the battery couldn't handle it, and it died before I made it home. Paps swarmed the hospital, hoping for a money shot, a soundbite, or even better, a video of Asher with me. Fortunately, Sloane had flown in from New York last night to deal with the situation on the ground. She, along with hospital security, was able to usher us out a side exit and into a discreet black SUV without anyone stopping us. A familiar man with salt and pepper hair waited in the driver's seat.
Good evening, miss.
Earl smiled at me in the rearview mirror, but his eyes were filled with concern. Good evening, Earl, I mustered, a half-hearted smile in response. I was happy to see him again, but it was hard to scrounge up much enthusiasm when my life had careened off the rails in the past hour. The lingering consequences of my collapse didn't help. Thanks to plenty of rest and medical attention, my pain wasn't as debilitating as it was yesterday. But it was still there. It was in my muscles, my joints, and my bones, and in certain moments it felt like it was in my very soul, tearing me apart from the inside out. Dr. Ambani wanted to keep me in the hospital for an extra day, but I'd insisted on going home. I wanted the comfort of my flat, and there wasn't anything more they could do for me that I couldn't do at home. Sloane stood next to the open car door, blocking me and Asher from the view of any passers-by. "Earl's taking you both to the Ashworth," she said, naming one of London's top luxury hotels. "I have to deal with the Paps first, but I'll be in the car behind you. I've already briefed the hotel staff. When you arrive, the general manager and security will personally escort you to your suite." Wait. My heart climbed into my throat. Why are we going to a hotel? I thought I was going home. I didn't want to sleep in another strange bed. "You can't go home. The place is swarming with press," Sloane said crisply. "So is Asher's house. The best thing you can do is lie low in a place where they can't find you. The Ashworth is the most discreet hotel in the city. They'll keep your presence a secret." I flinched at the mental image of Paps overrunning my quiet, tranquil neighborhood. It was my safe haven, and knowing that its sanctity had been breached felt more violating than any picture or video they could have snapped.
"It'll only be for the night,"
Asher said, ignoring Sloane's sharp glance.
"We'll get you home tomorrow."
"If the situation improves," she caveated. "I've contacted a security company that'll assess the situation and implement measures as necessary, but that'll take time. I'll see you later at the hotel." She closed the door before we could ask more questions. The cramps worsened. "How bad is it?" I asked as Earl pulled away from the curb. I'd purposely avoided clicking on the links friends, co-workers, and random acquaintances had sent me since the news broke, but curiosity gnawed at my insides. Asher hesitated.
"It's not too bad,"
he said carefully.
"Right now, it's mostly fact-based stories, if you define fact loosely. Who you are, how we started dating, my history with Vincent, that sort of thing."
"But?"
"But it's early,"
he said with no small amount of reluctance.
"The news just broke. I don't know what narrative the tabloids will spin in the upcoming weeks and months. They could tire of us before it gets really bad, or..."
"It could actually get really bad," I finished. I'd seen the way they tore public figures apart in the past. The thought of them doing the same to us made me want to throw up. I can't believe we live in a world where people are that invested in others' relationships.
"A lot of people are deeply invested in a lot of strange things."
Asher squeezed my hand.
"Luckily, I have the best publicist to guide us through it."
"The scariest one, too."
"That's why she's the best."
This time my smile inched a tad higher. Having Sloane on our team did make me feel better. She was a professional. She knew what to do, right? Fatigue weighed heavy on my limbs. I'd slept for nearly 16 hours straight, but I was still groggy and prone to fits of exhaustion. However, I clung to consciousness the best I could. I had a feeling this would be my last truly peaceful moment alone with Asher for a while. "How's the public taking your absence from yesterday's match?" I asked. Given the fanaticism of certain fans and the bitter rivalry between Blackcastle and Holchester, I dreaded their reaction to Asher skipping the match.
"Ironically, they seem to be taking it better now that they know why I missed the match,"
Asher said, his tone wry.
"Of course, there's a vocal minority that's furious with me, but a majority of the internet thinks what I did is romantic."
"It is romantic." I reached between us and laced my fingers through his. His warmth traveled up my arm and settled in the vicinity of my heart. "But I'm sorry you missed it. I know how much it meant to you."
"I'm not,"
he said simply.
"It doesn't mean as much as being with you."
Emotion tangled in my chest. I didn't trust myself to respond with words, so I squeezed his hand and looked out the window while I gathered my composure. We had to pass by the hospital entrance to reach the main road. The SUV's tinted windows prevented anyone from seeing in, but that didn't stop the skitter of chills down my spine when I saw the crowd of paparazzi near the entrance. Armed with giant camera lenses and an air of rabid anticipation, they reminded me of an angry mob on the verge of hysteria. And they were all there because of us. Asher Donovan dating his biggest rival's sister would have been a story. Asher Donovan having a secret relationship with his biggest rival's sister and skipping the first major match of the season to run to her hospital bedside? That was a sensation. Bile sloshed in my stomach. I tore my eyes away from the spectacle and refocused on Asher. "Have you talked to your parents?" I asked, in an attempt to take my mind off the scrutiny awaiting us. I'd received a dozen voicemails from both my mother and father. I imagine his parents were equally concerned. However, based on what he'd told me about his father, the elder Donovan was probably more upset about his skipped match than anything else.
"Not yet."
A grimace tugged at his lips.
"That's an issue for tomorrow."
"At least you and Vincent made up." I tried to look for a silver lining. If I'd known a few punches was all it took to heal your relationship, I would have tossed you two into a ring myself ages ago. I'd hated their fight while it was happening, but it turned out for the best. I'm glad one good thing came out of this craptastic weekend. Vincent wasn't here to see me off because Sloane pointed out that we needed less attention, not more. The fewer famous faces hanging around the hospital, the better.
"What can I say?"
Asher's grimace morphed into a small smile.
"Men are simple creatures."
"You mean Neanderthals?"
"Basically."
We finally left the hospital grounds and pulled into traffic. Yellow from the streetlights and red from the surrounding taillights blurred into a giant, jumbled stream that matched the chaos of my thoughts. The Paps didn't know we were gone yet, but they would soon. After that, this was the moment that had kept me awake at night before Asher and I started dating. The moment when my life changed and was no longer my own. It was one of the many reasons I'd been hesitant to get involved with him. But he'd proved time and again that none of those reasons mattered. My life hadn't truly been my own since I met him, and if I had to do it all over again, it wouldn't change a thing. However, that didn't mean I wasn't scared of what was coming. It wasn't the scrutiny that unnerved me. It was the uncertainty. Would the press paint us as heroes or villains? How deep into my life would they dig? Would they limit their attention to me, or would they go after everyone I worked and interacted with?
"Don't worry, darling."
It was like Asher could read my mind.
"We'll get through it together."
I nodded and swallowed the lump in my throat. We'd spent the better part of the summer preparing for the storm. Well, the storm was here, and he was right. We'd get through it together. We didn't have another choice. When we arrived at the hotel, we made it to our suite without incident. Sloane had sent someone to bring me extra clothes and essentials from my flat, so I wasn't stuck wearing the same outfit for God knew how long. While Ash showered and I waited for my belongings to arrive, I called my parents back. I finally had the energy to talk to them, and I didn't want to compound their worries by being radio silent. I checked in with my father first. He must have been waiting for my call because he picked up on the first ring when it usually took me several tries to reach him. He was a big believer in digital detoxes.
"Scarlett."
His worried voice flowed over the line and made my eyes prickle with emotion. I hadn't realized how long it had been since we actually talked.
"How are you, ma chérie?"
"I'm fine. I just got out of the hospital." I explained the situation to him. "We're staying at the hotel until things with the press die down."
"The press."
My father made a disgusted noise. His opinion of the press hovered just above his opinion of politicians, whom he despised, and below his opinion of fast food, which he considered an abomination.
"The press are vultures,"
he said, switching fully to French.
"It is their job to be as horrid as possible to get clicks. Don't listen to a thing they say."
"I'll try not to." I forced a smile even though he couldn't see me. "How are you feeling? Is your hip still bothering you?"
"It's okay now, but you know, it was so terrible over the summer."
My father heaved a huge sigh, and despite the circumstances, my smile turned genuine. Jean-Paul Dubois was nothing if not dramatic.
Luckily, your brother was hit well, or I would have been stuck with the nurse by myself. Can you imagine? Me alone with a stranger 24/7 in my house. Bah!
Really? I leaned deeper against the headboard. Vincent said you quite liked the nurse after a while.
What? He said what?
My father sounded flustered.
Don't listen to your brother. He should focus more on taking care of you and not about whether I like my nurse. That's what he's there for.
He's here to play football, Dad, not take care of me, I said, glancing at the bathroom door. Asher was still in the shower. I don't need taking care of. I'm an adult.
An adult who was hospitalized and now has her picture all over the news.
I flinched and my father sighed again when I didn't answer.
I'm sorry if I sound harsh, ma chérie, but you must understand why I worry.
My throat clogged at the way his voice softened. In his eyes, I was still his little girl, but he couldn't soothe all my hurts with a hug and a kiss anymore. That time had passed and we both knew it. I understand and I know I've made mistakes, I said, but I'm fixing them. Don't worry too much about me, okay?
It's in a parent's nature to worry.
Nevertheless, my father didn't press the subject.
If the attention gets to be too much, or if you need a break from the city, you can always come and stay with me. Paris is better than London anyway.
Another smile flickered over my mouth. Thank you. I'll visit you soon. Just not now, okay? I couldn't run away to France and pretend my problems didn't exist, no matter how much I wanted to. We spoke for another few minutes before I hung up, took a deep breath, and called my mother. As expected, she was beside herself. Oh, sweetheart, she said after I gave her the same summary I gave my father. She sounded like she'd been crying. I know how much the showcase means to you, and you know how thrilled I am that you're dancing again. But you have to take care of yourself. I'm not in London anymore to watch over you, and I just... I could practically hear her shaking her head as she sniffled. I don't want you to hurt yourself again. Trust me, I've learned my lesson, I said. I hated making her worry, but I also hated how everyone in my family infantilized me sometimes. I know better than to push myself that hard in the future. There was a long silence before my mother spoke again. Are you sure you want to stay in the showcase? Perhaps it would be better if... She trailed off, but her sentiment was clear. I sat up straighter, my heartbeat quickening. My mother had always been my biggest supporter when it came to ballet. She'd been devastated when my doctor said I'd never dance professionally again, and I knew part of her secretly hoped I'd make some sort of miraculous recovery so my career could pick up where I'd left off. For her to suggest I pull out of the showcase, she really was worried. I should have known when she didn't even bring up Asher. Normally, my love life was at the forefront of her mind. I'm sure, I said, my voice firm. It's only a few months away. I can do this. I have to. If I quit, all my hard work would have been for nothing. I would have been hospitalized for nothing. I refused to let that happen, especially when there was so much riding on my performance. I needed to prove to myself I could do it, if only for one last time. All right. My mother must have heard the determination in my voice because she didn't argue. However, her sigh contained a multitude of worries. Just promise me you'll take better care of yourself, okay? I will, I said as the bathroom door opened and Asher stepped out. I gave him a small smile, which he returned. I promise.
Asher. To say Coach was angry was like saying Mount Etna got a little spicy sometimes. He was, to put it simply, livid. It was the Monday after the Holchester match. Scarlett and I were still camped out in the Ashworth's presidential suite, and when I'd arrived at Black Castle's training grounds, the Paps were already out in full force. I'd have to pull MI5 worthy manoeuvres after practice to ensure they didn't tail me back to the hotel. However, I'd rather deal with the paparazzi than endure Coach's wrath. I didn't know a face could turn so many shades of red in so little time, but he proved my previous understanding of biology wrong. When it reached a particularly fascinating hue of magenta, I worried I'd have to add killing my coach to the list of grievances certain members of the public had against me.
You do not skip matches to see your girlfriend!
The vein in his temple throbbed so furiously, I half expected it to pop out, reach across the table and strangle me.
Of all the bloody stupid, reckless things you've done, that has to take the fucking cake!
She was in the hospital. I defended myself as much as I dared. I understood why he was upset, but it wasn't like I'd skip the match to frolic on the beach. I had a good reason. I got the call right before the match, and I had to make a split-second decision. If it was your daughter in the hospital, wouldn't you have done the same thing? I wanted to snatch back the last sentence before it even left my mouth. Coach was extremely protective of Brooklyn, and referencing her in any way while he was in a rage was probably not my best idea. A thundercloud darkened his face.
What did you just say?
I blanched. I mean, it was an emergency, sir, I amended. I'm sorry I missed the match, but I wouldn't have done it unless it was important. Thankfully, none of the tabloids had reported on the reason for Scarlett's hospitalization. To me, the reason was important, but I suspected Coach didn't think it was serious since she'd been discharged after an overnight stay. Hell, he wouldn't consider anything short of near death serious. However, he couldn't prove it. Judging by the tick in his jaw, he'd come to the same conclusion, but he wasn't happy about it.
Next time, he said. You call me, and you tell me what the bloody hell is happening. I don't want to hear it from your fancy-ass publicist.
Was that it? Was he about to let me off the hook? I held my breath. Yes, sir.
Now!
Coach's glare pinned me like a flailing bug to my chair. Shit. Not off the hook after all.
Can you explain why both my captain and my lead striker walked into practice today, looking like they lost a round in an MMA fight?
I forced myself not to touch my cut lip. The Paps had, of course, caught wind of our injuries when we arrived at the training grounds. They were probably spinning salacious tales about our fight over Scarlett at that very moment. They wouldn't be wrong, but I wasn't going to regale Coach with the ugly details from Saturday. Vincent and I had a misunderstanding that escalated over the weekend, but we sorted it out. I promise it won't happen again, sir, I added quickly.
It better not!
The vein in Coach's temple pulsed again.
I'll let it slide for now, but if I catch one bloody whiff of dissent between you two today or any other day, I won't be so lenient. Now get the hell out of here and join your teammates in training. You've missed enough work this past week.
Relief flooded my veins. He wasn't benching me or making me, I don't know, scrub the stadium with a toothbrush. Thank God. Yes, sir. The meeting had gone far better than I'd anticipated, but I hightailed it out of there before he changed his mind. I only missed warm-ups in the first 5 minutes of training, so it didn't take me long to catch up. The rest of the team didn't hold my absence on Saturday against me. They had wives, girlfriends, and beloved family members too. They understood. But I could tell by their stares that they were curious about Scarlett and my meeting with Coach.
What happened?
Adil pounced during our first break.
What did Coach say?
The other players drifted over. Their ears perked as I summarized our conversation.
You're lucky, mate.
Stephen slapped me on the shoulder. If the match had been a loss and not a draw. Shudders rippled through the group. If we'd lost, I'd be 6 feet under the pitch instead of standing on it. I'd watched a replay of the match. We'd played well, but so had Holchester. They didn't have any megastars in their current lineup. Bucci was the closest they had to one, but they were incredibly cohesive. That was their biggest strength and our biggest weakness. Hopefully that changed this season. We were already playing better together now that Vincent and I had patched things up, but we had room to improve.
Forget the match! Samson said. I want to hear about your secret girlfriend, Dubois's sister.
He whistled.
Ballsy. Very ballsy.
Heads swung between me and Vincent, who was walking toward us from the water station. I was not in the mood to discuss my love life with anyone right now. Luckily, Vincent cut in before I had to respond.
Is this training or is this a gossip session? He asked pointedly. We're not here to discuss our personal lives, unless you want to tell us about the girl you hooked up with during our last away match.
The rest of the team laughed and elbowed an embarrassed-looking Samson. He'd brought a girl back to the hotel, but refused to tell any of us who she was, which was unusual for him. He was typically an oversharer.
Man, Captain, why do you have to always do me like that?
He said with a shake of his head. Vincent grinned.
You make it too easy.
We didn't get a chance to speak further. Greeley shouted at us to gather for our next set of conditioning drills, and our good-natured teasing immediately morphed into concentration. Our assistant coach was running today's training. He was usually nicer than coach, but he ran us ragged. By the time practice ended, no one had the energy to do more than shuffle into the locker room for a hot shower and a change of clothes. Thanks for running interference earlier, I told Vincent. We'd finished cleaning up around the same time, and I fell into step with him as we walked toward the car park. When the guys were asking about Scarlett, he lifted his shoulder.
She's my sister. I don't want those idiots thinking about her in any romantic way.
He side-eyed me.
Too fucking late for you, though.
I smirked.
How is she?
Vincent asked.
I talked to her on the phone last night. She says she's fine, but you know her. She'll say she's fine even if she's forced to run a marathon barefoot over hot coals.
I know. Scarlett's stubborn resilience was one of her most admirable and most worrying traits.
She's feeling better. Still lethargic and in pain sometimes, but she's taking the week off work to fully recover.
It had been her idea, which gave me a measure of relief. She wasn't pushing herself to jump straight back into work. She has a call with Lavinia today to discuss the tabloid and showcase situations. The paps were staked out at RAB again, but Scarlett was most nervous about the showcase. She worried that Lavinia would pull her as the lead. I had conflicted feelings about the issue. I wanted Scarlett to get the chance to shine, but the thought of her enduring two more months of rehearsals made me break out in a cold sweat. There was only so much the human body could take.
Good. I'm glad she really is feeling better.
Vincent sounded relieved. We turned the corner toward the final set of exit doors.
What about the pap situation? They've been hounding me too, but not as much as you two.
I hired a team. They're securing our houses. My place already had a high-tech security system, but it wouldn't hurt to shore up its defenses. Once they're done, we'll move back home. We couldn't stay at a hotel forever, and Scarlett was getting antsy.
It'll blow over.
Vincent seemed like he was trying to convince himself more than me.
The paps have short attention spans. They'll find a new target soon and move on.
But I swear, his face clouded,
if any of them hurt Scarlett in any way, I will fuck them up.
I'll be right there with you. Despite our history of differences, the only thing we'd always agreed on was protecting Scarlett. He gave a short nod of acknowledgement.
You mind if I drop by the hotel later to see her? I'll be careful.
Sloane wouldn't like it. She was so serious about our lockdown, she came up with a convoluted strategy to make sure the paps didn't follow me from training to the hotel. I had to go home first, wait an hour, then sneak out back to meet Earl, who would, of course, be driving a different decoy car every time. I could stay at my house, but that would mean leaving Scarlett alone in the hotel, since her flat wasn't as secure as mine. There was no way in hell I'd do that. So, plan decoy it was.
Yeah,
I said. Sloane would rip me a new one later, but Vincent was Scarlett's brother. I wasn't going to keep him from her.
Just make sure not to drive your bloody Lambo. I won't. What the hell?
Vincent stopped halfway through the car park. The club's security must have kicked the paps out, because there was no press in sight. But the players who'd left before us were gathered in a half circle around one of the parking spaces.
What are you guys looking at?
The group's unintelligible mutters ceased. They glanced back at us, their expressions colored with varying shades of surprise, nerves, and pity. A few shifted uncomfortably, but no one answered. Instead, they parted, creating a clear path between us and the Hunter Green convertible parked in the space. That was my car. A mounting sense of dread hooked into my stomach. I walked past my teammates and stopped next to the driver's side door, where I immediately saw what they'd been gawking at. My dread solidified into cold, hard ice because there was one word, one name, scratched into the side of my favorite vintage Jaguar. Judas.
Chapter 45. Asher. Nothing brought a team together like an attack from another team. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the keyed car was Holchester's handiwork. People might think professional footballers were above such juvenile antics, but they weren't. The Judas scratched into the Hunter Green paint was proof of that. They were the only ones with the means and motive. If the incident happened in Holchester, I would have been more circumspect. But in London, it couldn't have been anyone else. They called me Judas consistently, and they'd played Chelsea over the weekend, so they were in the city through Monday. I didn't know how they did it without anyone noticing. Unfortunately, my car had been parked in one of the CCTV camera's blind spots, but it didn't matter. What mattered was that they did it. Even though it was my car, the rest of the club took it as a personal affront. Even Coach was angry, and I wasn't his favorite person at the moment. The fact that Holchester came to our training grounds and vandalized our property was an act of war. So we waited. We waited until they were back in town, 2 weeks later to play against Arsenal, before we confronted them. That night, Vincent, Noah, Adil, and several other players joined me at the Angry Boar, where the Holchester team always hung out after a London match. Mac had banned Lyle after he shoved me, so he was nowhere in sight. However, Bachi was playing billiards with another player when we arrived. The other player saw us first and nudged his captain, who straightened and turned. A slow grin spread over Bachi's face.
"Look who it is! Donovan finally shows his face. I thought I'd have to track you down after you ran away from our last match like a coward."
I let his taunt roll off me. Everyone in the UK, hell, everyone in the world, knew the real reason behind my absence from the Holchester match. My relationship with Scarlett had been prime tabloid fodder for the past 2 weeks. Every news website, every magazine, every bloody celebrity podcast was talking about us. Scarlett could barely enter RAB without getting accosted by the Paps. People were stopping her on the streets for photos, and she had to private her social media after it got inundated with follows and comments, not all of them pleasant. She handled the onslaught of attention as well as she could, given the circumstances, but it was taking a toll on both of us. All that to say, Bunchy was full of shit when he insinuated that I was too scared to play against him. He was trying to get a rise out of me, and I wouldn't give him the satisfaction.
"I'm not having this discussion with you here," I said icily.
I flicked my gaze at Mac, who looked like he was seconds away from kicking us out, fight or not.
"Meet me outside unless you want to join Lyle in, where is he? Eating pizza alone in his hotel room, I imagine."
Bachi narrowed his eyes, but he didn't want to suffer Lyle's exiled fate any more than I did. He followed me into the alley behind the pub, our teams trailing after us. The other patrons tried and failed to pretend they weren't eavesdropping, but I heard them buzz with excitement before we fully exited the establishment. The minute the door shut, I grabbed Bachi by the front of his shirt and slammed him up against the wall. The other Holchester players immediately bristled and moved toward us, but my teammates blocked them. The two sides glared at each other, drenched in the threat of violence swirling through the air. Summer heat had given way to an early fall chill, but the alley reeked of rubbish all the same.
"What you did to my car?"
I tightened my grip on Bachi's shirt.
"I knew you were bullies, but I didn't know you were petty criminals too."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
Bachi sounded unfazed by his current predicament, but his eyes glittered with loathing.
"We live in different cities, Donovan. Do you think you're so important that we'd risk our careers to play whatever prank you accused us of playing?"
"You're the only people who could have done it," I growled. "Judas, your favorite nickname for me. Who else would carve that into the side of my Jag?"
A shadow of what looked like true surprise flashed across Bachi's face before he laughed.
"I hate to break it to you, Donovan, But there are plenty of people who call you that, and plenty more who despise you enough to key one of your precious cars. You can't use us as a scapegoat for everything. It's not about scapegoating, it's about honor. You want to attack me? Have the balls to do it to my face. This sneaky sabotage is the work of a coward.
Bachi's smile vanished.
You want to talk about honor? How about we talk about loyalty?
He hissed. My temper reared its head again, fangs bared and ready to strike.
It's a transfer, and it's been 9 bloody months. Get over it! You know it's not about the fucking transfer!
He shouted back.
You can transfer whenever the hell you want. It's the reality of the league. But to blindside us and ditch us mid-season for Black Castle.
He spat on the ground.
You didn't give us any heads up. One day you were with us, and the next you were against us. That's cowardice.
The air thickened into toxic sludge. No one moved. No one so much as breathed. But the tension was so palpable, I could taste its bitterness at the back of my tongue. Bachi hadn't said anything I didn't already know. I knew I should have told them first, but I'd been afraid the news would get back to my father, and he'd talk me out of it before I signed the contract. I understood why my old team felt betrayed, but again, it had been 9 fucking months. I hadn't killed one of their family members or instigated a hate campaign toward them with Black Castle. They were holding on to something that should have been old news long ago, and none of that was a good enough reason for what they did. It wasn't about the property itself. It was about the principle behind it, the lack of respect and good sportsmanship.
I apologized, I growled. The minute the news came out, I apologized for not telling you earlier. This grudge is unnecessary, as was your fucking stunt with my car.
Bachi's lips thinned. He didn't acknowledge what I said. Fresh irritation streaked through me, but I refused to get into another fight. Not when I was already on shaky ground with Coach and the Paps were breathing down my neck. Anything I did would be blown 10 times out of proportion given the current scrutiny I was under. My teeth ground together, but after a serious moment of contemplating whether I could punch him once and get away with it, it wasn't worth it. I released Bachi and stepped back. However, the tension didn't dissipate. If anything, it intensified.
You want straight talk? I'll do you one better, Bachi said. Race me. Let's end this grudge once and for all. You win, we back off. We'll still talk trash on the pitch, but you'll never hear another word about Judas or your transfer from us again. If I win,
a dark gleam entered his eyes.
That jag of yours is mine, after you've fixed it up, of course.
That bloody bastard. He didn't want the car. He wanted a symbol for his victory. He wanted proof that he was better than me in some way. Every time he drove that car, he'd feel a kick of triumph at beating me. It was too bad for him. That was never going to fucking happen. My fists curled. It took every ounce of willpower not to take him up on his challenge and make him eat his words. I wanted to see his expression when he lost so badly that my blood burned with it. But racing would be worse than another fistfight, and I'd promised Scarlet I wouldn't do it, no matter how much I wanted to.
What's the matter?
Bachi arched an eyebrow, his expression turning mocking.
Got cold feet again? Going to chicken out the way you did for our match?
I bit my tongue so hard, the faint taste of copper filled my mouth. My pride roared at me to say something, to prove him wrong. I stormed in here with my team, ready to confront Bachi, and what did I have to show for it? A few useless words. If I wasn't going to fight him and I wasn't going to race him, why was I even here? I might as well have stayed home and fumed from a distance. You promised, Scarlet. A voice warned me away from the ledge. Scarlet doesn't have to know. Another, more insidious voice slithered into my ears, promising retribution with impunity.
It's one race, that's all. You didn't take me up on my challenge the first time. Now you're running scared a second time.
Bachi tisked in mock disappointment.
You've lost your touch, Donovan. It's only a matter of time before everyone else finds out you're not the perfect golden boy you portray yourself as. You say we've been holding on to our grudge for too long, and maybe we have. But I offered you a chance to end this feud once and for all, and you're the one who declined. He nodded at the silent players gathered around us. We have plenty of witnesses who can vouch for that. My heart slammed against my ribcage with bruising force. Archie's taunting words tangled with snippets from my past, filling my head with unwanted memories. You'll never amount to anything. Football is a ridiculous dream. Damn it, Asher, you're not trying hard enough. Do you want to be second best forever? Promise me you'll play for both of us. You have what it takes to be the greatest footballer in the world. Don't let this opportunity go to waste. You've lost your touch, Donovan. Your team or your son? My old teachers, my father, Teddy. Their fragmented voices sank their claws into reason and ripped it to shreds, making me bleed pure emotion in the dark alleyway. Do it. Don't do it. Walk away. You can't let him have the last word. The last gasp of rationality died beneath the roar of blood in my ears. I'd spent the better part of a year taking the high road. I'd endured the taunts and the hate messages silently, without retaliation, but I was sick of taking the high road. Bucci and my old team said they valued loyalty, but they were really bullies. They dragged their resentment out because having a target made them feel good. Unless I put them in their place, they'd continue their campaign of harassment until I snapped or they got bored. I hadn't made it this far in my career by being passive and waiting for things to happen to me. This was my life and my reputation. It was time I retook control of them. I'm not scared of anything or anyone, Bachi, much less you, I drawled, my smile a blade of white in the dark. You want a race? Fine. Let's race right now. Word of the last-minute competition spread like wildfire through a certain segment of the city's street racing community. I didn't know who alerted them to the event, but when we arrived at our designated meet-up spot in North London, the same spot where I'd raced against Clive and won, there were around 24 people waiting for us. Most of them were athletes. Simon was there. So was Clive himself, who I hadn't seen since our double date. He'd shown up with his rugby buddies, and they watched Butchie and me exit our cars to make the rounds with quiet anticipation. I greeted them with nothing more than a short nod. I still didn't like Clive, and I hadn't forgiven him for dragging Scarlett into the middle of our spat over the summer. He looked like he hadn't forgiven me for denting his ego, either. He clapped Butchie on the back and said something that made the other man laugh. There was no question who he was rooting for to win tonight's race. Noah came up beside me after I finished saying hi to Simon, who was back in the game now that his foot was fully healed. Are you sure this is a good idea? He said quietly. You're still on thin ice with Coach,